You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of October 17th. I'm John Gibson. With me on a Sunday evening with no baseball is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm running ragged, actually. It's like,
I know.
It's like no baseball means, boy, I get to spend a whole day kind of writing about baseball.
It's actually easier to sit back and relax and watch the games, right?
Well, it gives, you know, back in the day, we had colleagues who basically wouldn't write anything except sort of prepackaged stories. They were either game stories, you know, match reports, and press conferences, or they didn't write nothing.
Right.
If it wasn't spoon-fed on a plate, they weren't going to write it.
Right.
And it's games structure, you know, provide structure. They provide the answer. You don't have to think, you know, you don't have to decide who's going to win. You don't have to decide, you know, you don't have to make up the story. That's what, you know, the games are for. They provide a story for us to talk about. And press conferences, if they're good, if they're worth writing about, they provide us a story to write about.
Sometimes you just have to go to the press conference and write the story, no matter whether it provides something
well,
or
that's
not.
True. That sometimes that space, happens. But, yeah. And it's like, what the heck? Who cares? You know, there's those days. But when you're writing about more general things, of course, I was lucky because I had somebody tweeted at me yesterday one of the people I follow on Twitter tweeted something, and I said, that's interesting. So I wrote about that.
Okay. Well, yeah, so that helps.
It was fun.
Wherever you get it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, on this week's show, we've got playoff games to discuss. We're going to look at the Japan Series matchup, which is a rematch, and we'll examine some numbers regarding late inning performances and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so let's jump into it right away. We're just going to give our impressions from some of the games that went on, not break them down like we usually do, because we've got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, so we want to get to it. So let's start in the Central League with the CLCS, the second stage, and that was Hanshin against the Yakult Swallows, the reigning Japan Series champion Yakult Swallows. I guess we can call them defending champions because they're going back to the Japan Series. They wrapped it up very quickly. We're going to look at game one starting on Wednesday. It was a 7-1 win for the Swallows. They swept the series, including the one game advantage that they had. So the game I like to call the off the field game, and they won all the on the field games. So my takeaway from this game was I was going on the notion that the Tiger starters were going to have some troubles because they were not the front end guys, but Hanshin saved Yuki Nishi for this game. And I didn't know what to think about that, whether the Tigers had just said, well, we think we can get by the Bay Stars and we'll save him because he's kind of a front end, front of the rotation starter. We'll save him for game one of this series because we need to win this. Or he just wasn't doing very well recently and they decided to put him to the side and give him this game. I didn't read any reports about it. I didn't hear anything specifically about it, but it did not go well for him. Jose Osuna had a 3-run home run in the first inning, and Domingo Santana ends up driving in 3 runs, and Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa just took over the game after he got that early lead. And like I said, 7-1 was the final, and the Tigers just, you know, just never got it going. What was your impression from this game?
Well, they basically Ryan Ogawa just shut him down, and which is not really. I mean, we're not. He's one of these guys. We're not surprised when he pitches well. We don't expect it.
I don't think we know what to expect.
Well, no, that's the thing. We don't expect it, but we're not surprised when it happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, I fully expect him to do fairly well. I don't expect him to get, you know, shelled early or anything, but I am surprised when he has an excellent outing.
Yeah.
But well, I don't know what to expect. He's a grab bag sometimes.
Well, he's one of these, you know, that really is what you get with most of the Swallow starters. And to the extent that they have a game plan, which is they're basically going to try to throw strikes. Even when their pitches aren't that good, they're still going to try to get ahead in the count. And sometimes that just turns into a nightmare because nothing they throw in the strike zone is any good. But generally, if they've got – the thing is that they don't mess around a lot. And when the stuff is passable, it usually gets them by. You know, Cy Snead is the epitome of that. He's basically up there throwing strikes. And he and Ogawa had really had issues with, well, I think all the pitchers and pretty much all the players on both sides had issues with the umpiring in game one.
Okay.
When Kazuyuki Shirai was calling the game. And we got
calling his game. Yeah.
Yeah. Calling his game. Exactly. Which is that ain't a strike for me tonight, son.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And Ogawa was giving us some eye rolls. And
yeah, I bet Roki Sasaki was sitting somewhere shaking his finger, his hand, or his fist or something else at him. So yeah, as he was watching that game.
And of course the ultimate one came in the second inning. the call of the night came in the second inning when it was Yamaji, I can't remember his first name, Tetsuo Yamaji, the first base umpire, called out Fumihito Haraguchi on ball four on a pitch that he thought about he might swing. And he said, "You went around on that." And all I could think of is he wasn't watching.
Anyway. Oh, remember what I told you about these umpires, especially with two strikes, that they're really not paying attention.
He wasn't paying. He couldn't have been paying attention.
He couldn't have been. No, because it was a check swing, and he didn't even come around near the plate with his bat.
No.
But you know what? It doesn't matter. All that matters is when you call on the umpire whether he makes the save sign or the punch sign. And this dude woke up out of his slumber and made the punch sign. He said, well, ooh, me? What? Out? Huh?
Well, here's the thing is that the next day, the next night, Yamaji was umpiring down the right field line and there was another one. And I was thinking, I was half expecting him to raise his hand from right field on Haraguchi and said, that was a strike.
That was a strike too.
Can I call it? It was a strike.
Look, I get it. I fully understand that there's so many things that you have to be thinking about and be cognizant of as an umpire. That check swing sometimes is not the thing that you're looking for. But really, with two strikes, when it's going to decide the at-bat, you really have to be on your P's and Q's there and really start looking for it.
Funniest thing was, I mean, basically, Haraguchi, he had some words for him. He said basically, like, what are you looking at? And then when the inning was over, Shirai put his arm around his shoulder and said, look, son, we all screw up sometimes. That's not just me. And Haraguchi, as a former catcher, was laughing.
Yeah.
So which just cements my absolute respect for Fumihito Haraguchi. He's just one of these guys I just really love. So credit to him.
Yep. All right. Let's move along to game two. That ends up being a 5-3 victory for Yakult. And what was your impression from this game? I'll let you go first.
Well, this was the one. This was Shintaro Fujinami against Cy Snead. And it was, you know, it was the guy who, as I said, the guy who throws strikes, the guy who lives by the strike zone, and the guy who would if he knew what the strike zone was.
I was going to say he dies by the balls, by the ball zone.
Yeah. So Fujinami, you know, he was pretty much himself. He threw some really good pitches and didn't know where most of them were going. Mm-hmm. He walked a bunch of guys and then he made a. And the funniest thing was that he had a 1-0 lead until the third inning, and he made a good pitch to Munetaka Murakami with a runner on, and Murakami who's missed basically every fastball in the zone for the last 4 weeks.
Right.
Who's been behind? You know, who's been.
He's been awful.
And behind, he's just been behind. He's been behind. He's been slow on the fastball, and he threw him this. Well, I don't know what was it—a changeup or a slider? It was a sinker or something. Two-seam fastball.
I thought it was a two-seamer, but yeah, lower and away. Yeah.
That's what it was breaking away, and he just kind of went, "Oh man, I'm just going to put this in play because there's two strikes." And he put it in play into the left field stands. I'm thinking
in play. In the same swing.
It was like Craig Brazel time. It was like throw it in the middle of the zone and he doesn't know what to do with it. throw it on the corner. He gave Yakult a lead and they never relinquished it. And Jose Osuna came up and he hit a two-run home run. And Hideki Nagaoka hit a solo home run, and that game was pretty much over too.
Yeah, and I was thinking my first impression of this game was hearing that Teruaki Sato, the young Hanshin slugger, had been benched. And my thought was, well, if you bench Teruaki Sato, you best not miss. You know, it's like messing with the king here. And in the idea or the notion that, you know, whoever comes in for him, you better hit on him, as manager Akihiro Yano made that decision. And they put Jeffrey Marte in the lineup, and yeah, he came up, Marte did, in some big spots, and while he barely missed, and it was rainy this night, so it was difficult to hit, while he barely missed some pitches, and he could have hit a couple of them out of the park, and maybe on a clearer day or night when it's not raining, the results are better. But, you know, people just look at what the outcome was here in the playoffs, and he had to sacrifice flies, but it just wasn't good enough. And yep. The Tigers stranded 13 runners, and Jeffrey was part of that. So, like you said, once they got behind, and you know, Fujinami had the F word instances that he had, and including walking. What did he walk? Four guys.
In 3 innings.
Yeah, it was just too much to come back from. He only gave up the 2 runs, but yeah, not so good. And they brought in the young pitcher, Junya Nishi. Yeah, and he actually gave up 3 runs. So it just, you know, it wasn't a good night. And look, you got that one win advantage, and you lose game one, you're down, you know, I sit through the magic of NPB, you're down in one lost game, and you're down 0-2 in the series, and this put them down 0-3. So let's go to game three. And that turns out to be a teaching moment for the Hanshin Tigers in a 6-3 loss to the Swallows, and the Swallows back-to-back years in the Japan series. And it's a great achievement for them. But obviously the seventh inning was the talk of Twitter and the talk of the town, and just a huge error on probably the biggest play of the season for Hanshin. And the pitcher, Masumi Hamachi, who had been effective all season long. In fact, I had heard so many people compliment his pitching so much, but he had a misfortune or this unfortunate decision to try a glove flip with the bases loaded, and he fields a ball, a little dribbler. Murakami's, you know, at first when I looked at it, you know, I called it a 3-run infield something. And, but it was an error all the way. I think they gave him officially an infield.
They did give him an RBI infield single.
And yes. one RBI.
It wasn't going to be an easy play for him.
It was not, but this is the teachable moment, is that, look, you know, even if the run scores, which it was probably going to come across anyway, if you're the pitcher, eat the ball or grab it and try to run your way to the base or run your way to the runner or just tweeted it. So many people have been watching ESPN and seeing glove flip this and glove flip that. And we've got Yosuke Kikuchi of the Carp who does it a lot, but you know, it's not for everybody.
And well, they practice it like 18, 20 times a week. Although the first base,
on that,
although yeah, not I, to first base, first always base. Always at home plate, you know, when the right, ball's, you know, it's in front of them on a bunt.
Yes.
And
yes.
He was on his knees, and it was just not, you know, that's the thing of, I don't do this, you know, it's, you know, tell the boss, call in sick and say, eat the ball. Like you said, it's one run. They win the game. Story's over.
Yeah. Well, the one run, yeah, they would have, it would have tied the score maybe, but you know, you're not going to end up behind, which is what happened. You know, not only were you behind, but behind by two runs because you made that decision. So, I tweeted, it's a very disappointing way for a manager whose name starts with the same kanji as the Japanese word for error. If you think about it, Yano goes out with this very poor defensive inning because that was the second error in this inning. And, you know, I look at it this way. Your regular season issues don't disappear in the playoffs, in the postseason. I think they get magnified. And Hanshin had done a really nice job of, in that first round, playing good defense and just making the routine plays and then some of the better plays. They had some really nice catches in the outfield, but they didn't throw the ball around. And then this game with everything, with their season on the line, just a couple bad throws in the same inning, and they end up losing the game and they're out. So Akinobu Okada, good luck next year. I imagine we'll see an entirely new foreign contingent and maybe middle of the infield. In my opinion, that should change. So we'll see how they go about reconstructing their team next year. But I think there's going to be changes.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, my colleague who was the my colleague, he's not a colleague, he's a friend. I met outside of baseball, who was the Hochi Shimbun, the head of the Hochi Shimbun baseball desk in Osaka for years and years, and knows a lot about, you know, the Tiger dynamics, even though, you know, Hochi Shimbun is primarily Giants newspaper, but they have to, you know, they write about the Tigers every day. So
sure.
He said, essentially, the Tigers dynamic, and I, this was different from what I saw, so I thought it was interesting, is that everybody expects them to lose. And then they look for the scapegoats for that. What's the word I'm looking for that self-fulfilling prophecy? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's got to come at the worst moment. You know, so last year, I think although Akihiro Yano said that a year ago, he had already told, you know, he said at the start of last season, at the start of the 2021 season, that this would be his last. And then he got dumped on big time when the Tigers blew their lead last summer.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, that was the thing. You know, if you get your hopes up, then the worst thing is that you're good, because then they single you out as the reason they fail. And the thing is that when they're playing the Bay Stars, it's not as big a disappointment. It's almost like the thing about the Tigers is they have to wait until the disappointment tension is stretched to maximum, and then blow it big time. And that's, you know, that's sort of like the fear, you know, if you give up an error in a meaningless game, nobody's going to mind, but that's not the fear. The fear is that you're going to blow it at the worst possible moment. And that seems to be the Tigers' self, you know, it's almost like they go out and they tell themselves, don't mess it up this inning because it's the worst possible time.
All right, so farewell to the Hanshin Tigers, and the Swallows move on. And so let's talk about the Pacific League, making a seamless transition, and we'll talk about the PLCS second stage. And that began also on Tuesday. These games starting at the same time really got me upset, because I'm thinking, you know, I want to stagger them. But luckily, if you have a player, you can watch the PL game and rewind quickly what you missed, if you missed anything. So game one, all the games at Kyocera Dome, Osaka, 5-0 for Oryx over SoftBank Hawks. And you sent out a tweet after this game that said, the Fukuoka SoftBank walks. And I thought that was gold, because you often put out these corny, quirky jokes that are not funny, but this one was really good. And I wanted to compliment you on that. I did it immediately on Twitter, and I wanted to acknowledge that on the show as well.
You acknowledge my failure. My jokes are supposed to be bad.
Well,
sometimes
I don't know how to take that. Good job. Good job doing bad stuff.
Well, it's the Inspector Clouseau, my inner Inspector Clouseau, where I get it right by accident.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That was the whole story was just the, you know, they would have made Jerry Lewis proud.
Oh, no. And all the kids, huh?
And all the kids. Yep. The Oryx Buffaloes were doing the walking for Jerry's kids.
Wow.
And, it was an endless series of, well, they had three bases loaded walks, and the Buffaloes pitchers issued, of course, we kind of expect it with Shuto Ishikawa pitching that he's going to walk three or four guys.
Mm-hmm.
Tomohisa Ozeki walked three more, and he walked in a guy that Ishikawa left on base and walked in another one and then gave up an RBI single. And that game just got out of hand really
quickly. In a third of an inning, yeah, in Mr. Ozeki. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. And I tweeted, I was like, I'd never really seen three bases loaded walks in a playoff game. So that was weird, but yeah, you are correct. But I took away from this game that it was Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He dominated for the Oryx.
Oh, sure.
And the Hawks really couldn't match. They didn't have anybody like that on the mound for them either in the first stage or coming up in the second stage. And so they were not going to be able to deal with that, I thought. And Yamamoto went 80 innings. He struck out 10. He didn't walk anybody. He didn't allow a run, obviously, in a 5-0 win. So, and then Masataka Yoshida went deep. And I mean, that's just how you get beat. That's what it looks like. That's what it feels like. The walks, the bases loaded walks aside, when you don't generate any kind of offense and you can't match the other pitcher, you're going to end up losing. It's just a matter of by how many. So I didn't think it was that bad in terms of the score, because it could have been a lot worse had the Buffaloes come up with any kind of hit, you know, in those situations. But they did get the walks and they pushed home runs. But I thought the game was always in within reach of the Hawks, just a couple hits here and there,
yeah.
And they could put together an inning.
Well, Yamamoto had one tough inning when he had runners on second and third with one out. But
he decided, I'm just going to strike everybody out.
Yeah, and it was against the bottom of the lineup, so it really wasn't much of a challenge. But
Okay. All right, and then game two the next night. So this is Thursday, and this ends up being a closer game. 4-3, Oryx wins it. And you go first on your impression of the game.
Well, like the first game, in the first game we had Yutaro Sugimoto driving in the first run with a walk, and this was his game, and he took he got an infield single to open the scoring, and of course as was the case throughout the series, Masataka Yoshida was on base seemingly every time he came to the plate. Mm-hmm. This time he got hit by pitch, and then the bases were loaded, and Sugimoto up with the bases loaded again. This time he got an infield single. It was a really, you know, it was a credible hit. It was just like no chance that Kenta Imamiya was going to get to it. But then, of course, the old, you know, I don't want to even say it, but this was the game where the Buffaloes were going to get people thrown out.
Right.
This game should have been a wider margin, but they kept playing fast and, they kept playing fast and loose on the bases, like Norifumi Nishimura was managing again, or Tsuyoshi Shinjo, and the outs were coming fast and furious. And so after three innings, it was still tied 2-2 when it could have been this could have been a wipeout.
Right, and that was part of my impression. I thought it should have been 7-3, and we had Masataka Yoshida and then Yoadashi both were thrown out at the plate. And I thought Yoshida trying to score from second on an infield hit that was bobbled. I thought, geez, man, you do that if you're the fast guy on the team. You don't do that if you're you. You know, you're not that fast. So what are we doing here? The ball didn't get away that far. I think it was Kenta Imamura.
Yeah, he was going into the hole and he got his ball on the glove on it. And then when he went to pick it up, he kind of lobbed it. But he didn't lob it like into left field. The ball dropped like 3 feet away from him.
Yeah, like I said, you try that play if you're the fast guy. If you're not the fast guy, stay your butt at third. And so I thought that was just silly. And it's obviously something that you don't do in a playoff game. But they got away with it, and you know, they came away with the victory, and it was pretty easy. And looked like both these series were just going to be the minimum 3 games on the field for 4-game sweeps. And then we go to game 3. And it's the Hawks who win 3-0. And I just said the Buffaloes got Senga'd, you know, return to Senga.
Very good, yes.
Kodai Senga does what aces do. He just shuts them down, and the Hawks survive. And there was some late-game trepidation and all that stuff that they had to survive. But it just was not really – it was 3-0, but it didn't seem like it was that close to me a lot of the times, the way Senga was pitching. And he only threw 6 innings. He was gone, but the bullpen took care of business. And there was, in the first inning for the Buffaloes, they got behind early because starter Daiki Tajima threw wild. He threw an error. He had a throwing error on a bunt. He just only had to lob it over to first base, and he threw too high. So it was just weird. I thought it was kind of showed some nerves on his part. But the Hawks avoided elimination. And so we move on to game 4. And here's where the drama starts. It ends up being a 3-2 walk-off win, 9th-inning victory for Oryx, and it sends them to the Japan Series. And the player who got this hit, Keita Nakagawa, whom I really like, and I always have liked him, he knocks home the winner in the 9th with 2 outs. And he's someone, like I said, I think he found himself in then-manager or aforementioned manager Nishimura's doghouse in 2020. After hitting fairly well in 2019, and I don't know what happened. I don't think there was many reports on it. I know that he was involved in some poor defensive decisions and maybe some base running issues. But, I mean, that was prominent throughout the Buffaloes.
Yeah, well, he was one of these guys who basically his position was not catcher or pitcher.
Right, he's still listed among the infielders. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he was playing third base. He was playing second base, and he had a bad. You know, he made a kind of a dumb play. And that was something Nishimura really couldn't abide: people losing concentration on the field. So, if you lost concentration on the field and it cost your team, you could expect, you know, to spend time in the gulag, and that's what happened. I mean. He left Takahiro Okada down there for half a season because he let a ball go through his legs at first base.
Yeah, what I was going to say is that this was prominent throughout the team. This wasn't just
guy. It was all the thing. And Shuhei Fukuda got a little taste of that this year when Nakajima said, it was my fault that he missed that play. I should have, you know, taught him better. And the next day he said, well, I guess I should have taught him better, but he better go do a refresher course on the farm team. You know, this is a normal thing. This was an old normal thing for the Buffaloes, but the new norm is much closer to, you know, what we see with the Tigers and the Swallows, which is I'm going to cut you a slack. The manager goes and says, I'm going to cut you some slack, but I don't expect to see it again. And that's the end of the conversation.
Right, right.
And it's never, I'm going to show you who's boss and show the... Excuse me, I'm going to show the fans that I'm the boss and send you to the farm team and don't call us, we'll call you.
Has taken him so long to work himself back into favor. And even this season, he has played, like you said, various positions. I've seen him in right. He's playing left field in this game. He can play the infield. Like I said, he's an infielder by trade. Anyway, it was really nice that he was the guy to clinch it for him, especially with this 2-out situation. And this was such a fun game because we had Soichiro Yamazaki, who gave up this home run, the tying home run to Alfredo Despaigne. And so he's in the dugout praying with his hands clasped. I guess it was prayer. I mean, it's something that resembled prayer. And that was in the ninth inning. And it's all because he had given up this home run. They had this two-run lead, and he gave up a two-run home run after walking Yuki Yanagata. No shame in that. But he's, you know, we also had this fantastic catch by Taisei Makihara for the Hawks, and that could have blown the game open. Well, not blown the game open, but just given the Buffaloes a little bit more breathing room. So he makes a catch, keeps it close, and then after that it gets tied. And then you have Keita Nakagawa making this or hitting, bringing home the winning run. And just, you know, nice to see those young players, especially at the bottom of the lineup, produce. And then he was Nakagawa, I think, was at the top of the lineup. But he has really been a good hitter. I've liked him as a hitter more than a fielder. And I think, like I said, him working his way back up and getting some playing time at various positions really has helped him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, someone who does well in the Japan series once they get there, if, you know, make depending on if they can get him playing time at any of his three or four positions that he plays. We have to see the matchups. But yeah, that was my takeaway from the whole thing, was that I thought this was easily a game the Buffaloes, when they were formerly known as the Buffaloes with a L-O-W-S at the end instead of L-O-E-S at the end, would have found a way to blow. And they just made the plays. They made good sound decisions. They made good pitches. They caught the ball. I think Shuhei Fukuda also had a fairly nice catch in this game as well. So I'm just happy for them. I'm happy for the Buffaloes. The Hawks, I just think they could not overcome all the various injuries. They didn't have other than Senga, and I said that Senga probably couldn't match up with Yamamoto. He probably could. It's just that he would not be going 8 or 9 innings with Yamamoto. He would probably disappear at about the time he did, 6th inning, 7th inning, and he'd be off the mound. And I just didn't think they had the horses this year, the Hawks, and that's why we don't see them going to the Japan series.
Yeah, this game was really interesting for me. One of my favorite pitchers, Tsuyoshi Wada, started for the Hawks, and he was pretty much as expected. He was throwing strikes, and the game really got interesting in the third, because he breezed through the first two innings like nobody's business, and then he issued a walk to lead off the third. And then with two outs, he's facing Shuhei Fukuda. And Fukuda, I think he fouled off. Wada's going, it's two outs. I'm not going to walk you, dude. And Fukuda made him throw, I think, 12 pitches. And the 12th one was basically a ground out. And it was an error. He reached on an error. And Wada got out of the inning, but he must have been a little gassed at that point. You know, just that whole thing. He was cruising. And then the Hawks come up in the top of the fourth. And I'll tell you, Taisuke Yamaoka was absolutely brilliant.
I had never seen him pitching that well.
I mean, against that first inning, against second inning, leading off the second inning, Yuki Yanagita. And he's like, first of all, every pitch he's got is really moving, and his pitches are moving and diving and sinking. And Yuki Yanagita is like going, just throw me something straight, dude. He just didn't have it. They were just helpless. 9 straight. Bam, 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 bam. Second inning, one out, and probably the hardest hit ball in the game by SoftBank comes off his left, just low on his left shin above the ankle. And it's caught, it's fielded it at short for a ground out. But then he was hurt a little bit, and he gave up a single, but that was less to do. I mean, he still was so poised, and so, just poised with a capital P. Before he gave up his first single to Taisei Makihara, Makihara squibbed one down the first baseline, and Yamaoka had a chance to field it, but he just sort of looked at it and said, if I touch this ball, he's going to be safe at first. So he did this kind of limbo to keep from the ball from touching him, and it rolled foul.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't believe he didn't touch the ball. He leaned back and let it go foul. And it was amazing. And then, of course, Makihara said, well, I'll show you. And he lined one to left field for the first hit. And then Yanagi took out a single and he got out of the inning. But that was it for Yamaoka. I mean, he had this brilliant start, but his leg was probably swollen up,
He got hit on the left calf, and it might have been affecting him.
He gave up
some hard hit balls after that.
Pulled him after four innings, and then Wada's coming up, and he just had that tough third inning, kind of like thanks to Fukuda, and he makes a good pitch to Keita Nakagawa that Nakagawa puts a beautiful swing on, and lobs it into left field, just a beauty. And then I wrote in my blog that Wada probably never missed a pitch as badly in his life as the 0-1 pitch he threw to Masataka Yoshida. Oh my gosh, a change up at the letters. Flat, straight, and Yoshida hit it into the fourth deck in dead center. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, well, he didn't miss it.
He did not miss it. It was like he was probably thinking, man, early Christmas. So that was that. And then the home run that Despaigne hit was not a bad pitch. It was he missed it up. That was a good fastball. I mean, that was Despaigne looked like old Alfredo. He looked like the old version, not the old Alfredo Despaigne that we're used to this year. But he looked like his former self, and he put that one, hit that one pretty far. So this was a really intriguing game. We had some great defensive plays. We had some great pitching. Just a wonderful game. And at the end, the Buffaloes got to leave on Moinello, which is, if you can do that, credit to you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And as I said, Oryx is going to Oryx is new meaning.
Yeah, I believe you. Especially when it comes to that bullpen, because they had no qualms about going to it. And it's a weapon. The bullpen for Oryx is a weapon. And as we transition and talk about the Japan series now, I think it's no shock that strong leadership at the top of these, at the front of the bench, if you want to put it that way, with the managers of these two teams, I think that has been the basis for a turnaround in both organizations. And I just like both of these managers, and it's a good matchup. Obviously these teams played last season, they ended last year with the Japan series, and the Swallows won, and the Swallows pretty much dominated the matchup, and they looked strong the whole time. And now this year, the difference for me is that I'm looking at the pitching matchups, and there is no Yasunobu Okugawa, no ace level guy for the Swallows to match up with Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Oryx Buffaloes this time. I don't like that Keiji Takahashi has been, he just kind of popped up out of nowhere to be back on the front lines after so long, even though he pitched well against the Tigers in the first round of the playoffs. But so I think the Oryx might have an advantage when it goes down the line of pitching rotation as we go through the games. It's perhaps, the Pro Yaki News suspects that rookie Hikaru Yamashita of the Swallows is going to get a start. It could be him. It could be Masanori Ishikawa, Tony Barnett, our friend Tony Barnett's.
I think he'll get a start. I think he'll.
Yeah,
get
I
a
think
game.
He will. I think
he's
going to
be that game three starter in there somewhere.
Yeah, but I'm looking at the pitching, and I'm I don't think I. It's pretty much, other than the Yamamoto game, any game that he pitches in, it's pretty much a push, except that the bullpens are really both really good, but I might be leaning toward the Buffalo's bullpen at this point. Although I do see the Swallows lineup has more depth, but I think the Oryx guys can put together. They can scramble up a little bit more runs in terms of, you know, Mune might be able to steal a base for you or put on a play with him and hit and run. And Fukuda might be able to steal a base for you. You can hit and run with Nakagawa. So I don't know. It's too close to call, but I'm leaning toward the Buffaloes winning this year. And then probably what we'll do is we'll have next year and they'll end the trilogy and one team will, you know, win that second one, and then they won't meet in the Japan series for another two decades or so.
Well, I think the difference for me in these two teams is that the Swallows starting pitching was like two different seasons this year. The first half of the year, they were just really good. I mean, they basically picked up where they left off in 2021. And then when the pandemic hit them, and that was, of course, Keiji Takahashi was one of the guys who got swept up in the second round of coronavirus infections. Mm-hmm. And he didn't pitch for 2 months. He hadn't pitched since the middle, I think the 10th of August or something.
Yeah, it has really been a long time. But like I said, he did pitch well against the, Tigers, but maybe it was the Tigers that
he pitched. No, I think he pitched okay. But there's a couple of things. Hisanori Takanashi, who was quite good last year, he's completely fallen off. He's completely fallen off. I mean, as I said last
week, he's no longer on the menu.
No, he really isn't. I think it's the walks. And the one thing that the Shingo Takatsu's Swallows are is they're a team that really wants to make guys hit their way on base. They don't want to be giving away nothing for free. They want to be ahead in every count or almost every count and make the guys, you know, swing at your pitches. That's the plan. It worked better than it last year than it did this year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a good plan because it keeps you from doing one of those Jerry Lewis games. And I mean, it has happened. I mean, the Swallows, you know, they do it. They just do it less than everybody else. But so they've got that. That's going for them. The Swallows have, I guess the one thing the Swallows do have going for them is they probably have the best team concept. I mean, the Rockton Eagles do too, but they just don't. It's a one-dimensional team concept with the Eagles, in which their whole plan is just to walk until you can't walk them anymore, and you have to throw things, fat pitches down the middle of the plate, and that works a lot, but it's an inconsistent plan. The Swallows' plan is pretty consistent. It's the hitters is get ahead in the count, it's the pitchers get ahead in the count, and they're pretty good at it, and that's just really the way to take advantage of what baseball has to offer you. And they're really good at that. So I like that. The starting pitching, I do not think is nearly as good as Oryx's. I think the Swallows bullpen is as good as Oryx's. They don't necessarily throw as hard, but I think they're in a similar spot last year.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I think they're in a similar position. I really wouldn't pick either of them to be all that outstanding. I do think the Swallows lineup, especially with the big contributions. I mean, Murakami could wreck the series in three games if that's him. And there's really nobody on either team who has that possibility. I don't expect it to be because he's been just completely out of whack for the last month.
Yeah, so I don't. The potential is there,
but I don't expect that. But on the other hand, I think if Masataka Yoshida can do it too on a slightly lower level.
Sure, especially at Jingu. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Of course. And but the thing is, after that, the Swallows have Osuna, and they've got Osuna, and they've got Domingo Santana, who are great. And they've got Yasutaka Shiomi, who hasn't really done much in the postseason, but he's always a threat. I mean, they've got the pop. I mean, they've got pop.
Yeah, he was all over the bases against Hanshi. I don't know what you mean.
Yeah, he was.
That,
he just wasn't hitting the home runs like he was early. You know, he wasn't big a deal. But I think the Swallows offense is a fair shade ahead of Oryx's, which is of course where Yutaro Sugimoto comes in. This guy was basically was a zombie much of the season. Of course, he also Oryx also had a lot of trouble with COVID, and he was one of the guys who was out for a while, and Yoshida was out for a while. Of course, Yoshida is one of these guys he's like a time capsule. Just open him up and he's back, you know, he's just back where he was 20 years ago.
Right.
You know, he just like never ages. He's always fresh and ready to go. And he's a remarkable player. And I love both these teams. If it comes to extra innings, I think the Swallows are a better team, but that's pretty much it. I like this. I think this is a much closer series than last year. I mean, I think last year I might even have picked the Buffaloes in seven last year.
Yeah, you picked the Buffaloes. I picked the Swallows last year. So who you got this year?
It's as much of a toss up as possible. I think the Pacific League is still a better league, and that was the basis for my picking Oryx. But I think the Swallows, first half of the season they could have took them in five games, but I think right now I really don't have a clue. I'm going to say Swallows in seven.
Yeah, I want to agree with you, and probably if I were betting, I probably would, but I'm not betting, and I don't have to. I like what the Buffaloes have been doing. I like how they look, and I like how they've been playing. And like I said, they're going to be playing again in the Japan series next year to figure out this trilogy. So for this so it can work out that we have a final say in this trilogy that I think the Buffaloes have to win this year. So I'm going to go with the Buffaloes. Just a gut feeling kind of. I like the way they're playing. But definitely I think the lineup is deeper in Swallows land, and I think the pitching can match up, especially with the bullpen situations. But I do favor the Oryx bullpen, actually, even in if there are a bunch of close games and they go extra innings. I like all the arms that come out if they can get decent starting pitching. And I think they can get decent starting pitching.
So well, I think they can. But I think also the Swallows can I think that they have, you know, like I said, the basic team concept is just so solid that you have to fight. The Buffaloes aren't as good at it. I don't think any teams in Japan is quite as good at that as just taking advantage of the strike zone. And if they've got a chance to prepare, I think they'll do a really, really good job. And I think I think the Buffaloes are right now, they're just as good. So the Swallows have to dig deeper. But I think they're also, like I said, I think the team concept is big, and I've said it over and over again. But I'm a big fan of planning, because I'm probably the worst planner in the world, but I'm a big fan of it.
Okay, all right, I got Buffaloes in six. Let's make a four-seam transition, and you looked up some numbers about late game leads and team performances, and we were going to get to it last week, but we just kept talking.
Yeah, geez. Okay. Well, when does that ever happen?
Whenever your mic is on. Oh, wait.
Hashtag high heat.
All right. So with that, what did you find? Now, you did. What was the impetus for this research that you did?
Well, no, I just what the impetus was when you mentioned that the Hawks had blown a bunch of leads early in the season. You know, somebody was saying they, you know, it was voiced in the sense like the Hawks lost X number of games when they were leading.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you were repeating what somebody said on the broadcast one night. And so I started thinking, oh, that's interesting. Let's see, you know, what goes on.
I don't remember saying that.
It was probably about June or July. Anyway, yeah, you said you had been watching a broadcast and it said, you know, the Hawks had lost X number of games when they were leading. And, you know, and that got me to thinking about, well, how, you know, and I.
Oh, said, I bet I know what's happening here. I know what's happening here. You're twisting words.
No, you were just, you were repeating something you saw on TV.
But I probably. Thinking, Yeah, I probably was specific about the fact that the Hawks have lost X number of leads.
Sure.
When and I gave a number, but you are doing what you do with my words, which is not remembering them clearly and filling in the blanks.
That's what I said. You said they lost X number of games, and I thought, that's interesting. Oh,
you said a bunch of games.
Yeah, well, no, there was I don't remember the exact number. I'm sorry.
Well, that's why I say you're just filling in the
You said they lost X number of games on a specific number of games, and I thought,
let's take a look. Yeah.
Is that an unusual number? Of course. It always depends because you don't know whether they're blowing early leads or late leads or whatever. So anyway, mm-hmm. I built a little database about, what every team's lead was after every half inning.
Excellent.
Okay. Anyway, this is nothing to do with the Hawks. And in fact, as I look at it now, it doesn't seem to be the same thing I was looking at the other day when I was, looking at numbers, but I don't have the numbers I made for last week's podcast because last week's podcast was over and I erased that page.
Oh, I have them. You sent them to me.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, actually, I did send them to you. I did send them to you.
So you have them actually in your SMS.
Which means I do have them in my SMS and I'm just pulling them up now. So when I was commenting about it I was actually commenting on this during the Swallows Tigers series, that basically the Tigers are not a good come from behind team. And what I found out in my research is when teams are leading by 3 runs or less in this after the 7th inning.
Okay.
There's not a lot of difference between the best team and the worst team. They're all pretty much the same. So for example, when teams are leading by 3 runs or less after 7 innings, the best record in Japan was 969. The absolute worst was 776.
You got to say who they were.
Okay, the best was the Eagles. The worst was the Carp.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, the best team had a 31-1 record. The Eagles, the worst team were the Carp. They were 29-8. I mean, that's absolutely worst, but there's not a lot of variation. The median is like 9-10 winning percentage. So it's normal that teams leading by 3 runs win the game. Everybody plans for that is what I'm saying. The teams all have a plan. Some of the players are not quite as good. Some of the offenses are not quite as good, but if you're ahead by 3 runs, generally you win. You can pretty much write that game off. Even the worst team is winning 4/5 of its games.
And I'm guessing these 37 wins by the Dragons were the most when leading after 7 innings by 3 runs.
Well, no, actually the most leading by after the Lions had 50 games mm-hmm. and they won 45.
Okay.
Tied one.
Wow. Yeah,
but they had more games. The Dragons only had 41 games, and they won 37 of them.
Yeah, they didn't have too many 3-1 leads, as which are 3-run leads, as which are trying to
they
say.
They didn't have as many 3-run leads after 7 innings. I'm not talking about after any time after 7. I'm only talking about after the 7th inning. So
correct. Yeah.
Okay. So there was that. So there's not a big difference there, but there is a big difference between how teams performed when they're behind.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the teams that were trailing after 7. We had the Nippon Ham Fighters, who were 19-60, which was easily the worst in Japan.
Woo.
And then the other
that's
hand,
a lot of trailing.
Yeah, well, we had 11 teams. Well, you know,
it's like they lived in a trailer park. They're trailing.
Well,
so
that's good, actually. Okay, but most of the teams trailed it, 70 to 75 times after 7 innings. It's not that unusual. The difference is the Fighters and Hawks and Giants were really bad at coming from behind.
Mm-hmm.
Most teams are not great, but most, they're winning a third of them or 40%. But those guys are really, really pretty bad. One team was above 500 when they were trailing by three or less. And that was the Yakult Swallows. They were the only, they were 35, 34, and four.
Which goes down
to A, they've got a good bullpen, and they weren't worried about using good pitchers when they were trailing. And they had, they had that huge offense. So those things work together. The other thing I found out was,
you had the extra innings.
I had the extra innings, but the problem with the extra innings is there's not a ton of games.
Okay.
The Tigers were the worst in extra innings. They were 2-10-4 when they were 2-10-4 in games that were tied after the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very well. Okay, they were bad when they were tied after eight, which is not a good sign. And they were here's where the Tigers were. They were when they were tied after. So the Tigers were bad when they were tied in late games.
In general, so late game 7th, 8th, 9th innings.
Yeah, when it was 7th, 8th, 9th, if the Tigers were tied, if the Tigers didn't have a lead after 7, you could pretty much write them off. So that was the thing that I was going. That was kind of the thing that I
learned. What was their record?
Well, when they were tied after 7, they were tied after 7, they were 6-12-2. The best team in Japan was the Bay Stars. They were 19-6-1. The Dragons were very good. The Hawks were very good. The Hawks were good when they were tied. They were bad when they were not a good come from behind team.
So, you went through all these numbers, and my whole takeaway after seeing them that day when you sent them to me was, wow, the Dragons really did well in some areas here. If they could just hit and put some runs on the board, they would be in the playoffs. Yeah,
If they hit an
league average offense, they would have been in the playoffs.
No, sure. they were the team. They had all those relievers that they weren't afraid to use. Now, what happened? They were stopping people. They were keeping people from scoring lots of runs late in innings when they were losing, trailing, tied, no problem. But they weren't scoring runs. So you kind of need both sides. The Tigers were also a team that basically was a problem of A, I think the Tigers were going by the philosophy of if we're not leading, and this is kind of a fatal flaw that is slowly eroding, which is if it's not a save situation, let's use our third or fourth best reliever.
Right.
When it's tied.
Let's get through it. Let's try to get through it. Yeah.
Wait till we've got a lead to use our best guys, and then they lose, then they bring in their fifth best pitcher and they're losing by three runs, and that there's no chance to ever be, we don't see that as often anymore. We see better, the top pitchers coming in tied games a lot now. So the Tigers were still a little bit, Akihiro Yano was still a little bit in that, let's save the better pitchers for when we're leading. And then Tigers offense being not that good was another problem. So,
He was old fashioned. He was old fashioned. He was old school.
In that respect, he was old fashioned. Yes. In the same respect that, Shingo Takatsu is old fashioned, because if there's two outs and a runner on second, the center fielder is going to be playing 10 feet behind second base.
Hashtag high heat.
Yep. All right. A couple of notes before we move on to the high heat. We did not acknowledge that Murakami was the youngest to win the Triple Crown, and that he did hit that 56th home run. So the most as a Japanese-born player. However, we defined that after finding out that Sadaharu Oh was foreign contingent. Yeah.
Well, that's what we think, but right now that's still up in the air because
and I'll
tell you why it's up in the air is because first of all, Japan doesn't define its players as being Japanese.
Okay.
It's the group of players who fall under category A have no roster restrictions. And then the group of players, everybody else is restricted to X number of players on the active roster and the full roster. So it's always been that case of these guys and other guys. Now, sometimes those guys are Japanese citizens. Some guys, those are guys who enter through the draft. It's changed repeatedly, and they're never called Japanese players, although Oh was born in Japan and Murakami was born in Japan and Vladimir Valentin wasn't. So I think we can call, we can say that, yes, he, whether he, Oh was treated as an outsider because he was not a Japanese citizen or not, which I am not, some people say he was and some people say he wasn't, but it's not really clear right now. Robert Whiting, who wrote about it in his Substack and also for the Yukon, his column in the Yukon Fuji, had that excised from his Yukon Fuji because the editors said, no, he was never treated like a roster. He was never subject to roster quotas. So it's still a little fuzzy right now. But he was born in Japan, and Murakami was born in Japan. So
there you go.
When they talk to Murakami, he said more home runs in any season than any other player who was born in Japan.
Gotcha. And then we also have the draft coming up this Thursday. Now, I haven't done, I guess we'll review it a little next time out, but I've only seen a couple players who have been talked about. I haven't heard about some outstanding pitcher. There's no Daisuke Matsuzaka or Yu Darvish out there this time out. So, but we will review next time out. So,
The only guys I know are Shogo Asano, high school pitcher, who was a big shot at Koshien this summer, and the two-way player, who is a Toyo University outfielder and pitcher. His first name is I forgot. His last name is Yazawa, and apparently the fighters are all over him. for obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, and he probably would want to be all over them. So then it'll be Chunichi that gets him.
Yeah, so they can make him play shortstop.
And they'll say, yeah, you don't get to do either. Yes, exactly. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we got a great-sounding MP3 question. Mm. Thank you very much from Roop. In Tasmania, of all places. Wow. All right. Thank you very much for listening. And we apologize for the long wait, but we're getting to it. And before I play it, I would just like to say he sent an email along with the MP3 that had some very kind words leading up to it. And if you'll indulge me, he says, I'll read some of them. He says, I'm Roop. I live in Tasmania and sometimes Nara. My wife's dad is a Hanshin tragic. So I have inherited that. I love the dichotomy of opinion and analysis on JBW, not to mention the humor. And just a note on him, he said he has been listening for 5 years and wow. He sent the MP3. Well, he sent the question in two formats, but I can open WAVE formats. I can open MP3. MP3 is the easiest. And I think that's why I always say send us MP3s because you can open your smartphone, make a short recording and then ship it right from your smartphone. So it's so much easier than trying to get a mic and all that other stuff. But anyway, here is Roop.
Hey guys, this is Roop from Tasmania. I've been watching a lot of baseball, Japanese baseball, because of my father-in-law's Japanese. And I've been watching more baseball than all the Aussie sports. And your podcast has been really stitching it all together for me. I have a question which may or may not be able to be technically done, depending on Jim's computer, I think. I was wondering if you could kind of take Murakami's RBIs out of the stats completely, as if he didn't exist, and replace him with an average of the team. And then if you could do that on every game and come up with how many runs Swallows would have scored, and if that would have been a win or a loss, and then compile what their win-loss rate would be. Obviously, there's heaps of other extraneous kind of factors in there, but just kind of a idea of if you could raise this guy, you know, what kind of impact does he have on their standings? Thanks heaps, guys. And, enjoy your baseball.
All right. Thank you very much again for the question. So, and I nagged Jim and because I can't do any of these things.
You don't nag.
Oh, okay. Well, if I'm asking for an interview, that doesn't feel like nagging to me. But if I'm asking you, hey, have you looked this up or have you done this assignment or anything like that, that feels like I'm nagging you. But anyway, before you answer, I love the numbers game thing and I understand the idea, Roop. In reality, that's really not how the game plays out for me. If there's a different guy in the batter's box, then it's a different situation, which means there's a different approach from the opponents, different approach from the manager of the opposing team. And then based on whoever is in the batter's box, then there's an appropriate and direct different kind of approach for that guy, too. So, you know, baseball is so matchup oriented and so situational. I think things change with the count and the circumstances on the field so much that it's really hard to just plug in somebody else or somebody else's numbers or try to figure out what's going on. I think it's impossible to know or assume or believe that this is going to tell you much. Yeah, I just see like most guys get, you know, you might challenge a Jim Allen in the strike zone, but you might not challenge a John Gibson in the strike zone. So I just think the way people go about pitching, you know, you always see it, right? You have a guy who comes up with the bases loaded and he hits some weak tapper back to the mound. But then later in the game, the same guy comes up and gets a different pitch and or a similar pitch even and whacks it to the moon. And then you're like, well, why, how come you didn't hit that in the first inning when the bases were loaded? Well, the pitcher didn't throw him that kind of pitch in that location for him to do that. And maybe it wasn't in the strike zone or maybe that particular player was trying to do too much at the time. And in this particular at bat where he hits the home run, he took a different approach. So you just never know because it's so situation oriented. Anyway, so Jim, what were you able to find?
Well, I think what John's is can paraphrase that as Newton's third law of baseball motion, which says that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction.
I was wondering, who is this Newton dude? Who did he pitch for?
I think his career ended in AAA Sacramento, but okay. Well,
again, Jim has, you know, has done what he can with it. Now, Jim and I were talking about it today. Now, I guess, how are you going to figure this out?
No, certainly I the way that Roop phrased his question, I really can't, you know, I can delve into things that are broad based and I try to explain this concisely, because if you take an average, what John said is absolutely true, because if you take an average play, you replace Munetaka Murakami's plate appearances with that of an average batter, the rest of the Swallows team's offensive opportunities are going to shrink because the average batter is going to be on base about 32% of the time instead of 45% of the time.
Okay.
So the team's going to have fewer offensive opportunities, fewer, you know, that guy may be making more outs and doing less with them. They'll have fewer plate appearances as a team. The whole offense will shrink accordingly. So that's a hard way to look at it, and it's really complicated. And I can't really look at it within a game. I mean, I can take a player's home run, you know, and I can replace it with a single and sort of like say, well, you know, well, how does this affect the chain of events in the game? But that requires, you know, even for one game, that's a massive amount of work. And for 143 games, nobody's paid me that much yet. I'm open to offers, mind you. But and you could do Markov chains and things, analysis like that, which are really kind of fun. But I don't have a computer program for it. So that would, of course, be the best way, would be to substitute the best way to do it, but actually use it in actual games and say, well, in this game, that home run would have, in fact, been a ground out, you know, and the three, the grand slam would become the third out instead of a four run home run. That I cannot do. So I'm going to talk about what would be over the course of a season, the sort of estimated impact of trading, Munetaka Murakami in the Swallows offense this year for an average hitter. And first of all, I'll add this, that an average hitter in NPB is really, really valuable. I mean, you know, it may not sound like much, but if you've got an average hitter, if you've and I'll say this, the average hitter in Nippon Professional Baseball this year created about, if you gave him the number of plate appearances that Munetaka Murakami had, he's going to create about 5 wins for your team.
Hmm.
Because average. The thing is that there's a lot of guys who have, there's a ton of guys who get 450, 500 plate appearances who are below average because they're still helping, you know, they're producing. Average is a tough thing. Average means you're better than a lot of guys. Of course, the guys who win you the pennant is generally, you know, the California Angels. Oh, goodness me. The Los Angeles Angels problem is that they don't have enough average guys on the team. They got a couple of superstars and maybe one other average guy, and everybody else is pretty much below average.
Right, right.
So now I'm going to couch this in terms of how many games they win. So Murakami basically won. I've got, on offense, his bat was worth about 15 wins this year for the Yakult Swallows. Yeah?
Okay.
An average offensive player in the Central League with as many plate appearances as Murakami had would be creating a little more than 15 wins. Would be creating a little more than 5 wins. That's about 11 wins difference. So if we were to, you know, keep Murakami's defense at third base and just substitute him with a faceless ordinary player and plug him into the Swallows lineup, my guess is the Swallows would have finished somewhere slightly better than 500, maybe 73, 66, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, those 11 games go to the other Pacific and Central League teams, so it's hard to say whether that would have been enough for them to finish first or not, but
sure.
That's my answer. That's the best answer I can give you, Rup, but I really appreciate the comments and the question. So keep them coming from Tasmania, because I got a lot of friends who spent a lot of time in Tasmania. So
oh really? Yeah.
Go
yeah.
for it.
All right. Well, yeah, that's a good sound in MP3. And we have a couple more questions. We will keep them on deck and get to them next week. Because we don't have that many games. The Japan series doesn't start until Saturday. So we'll have a couple games to talk about, but we'll have mostly questions. So please, anyone else who has a question, please ship it over to us. You can hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. You can send questions and MP3s like Roop did via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Also, go to our Facebook page and leave us a message there. And like I say, criticism. And I love the compliments. I'm glad. You know, it's so funny. It's like Jim and I, we don't even try to argue about things.
Happens naturally. Even when
he twists my words and, you know.
I wasn't trying to twist your words. I know you weren't.
No wife thinks she is twisting her husband's words.
Now you're being mean because I was trying to paraphrase you. I wasn't trying to say you were not being specific. So that's where you twisted my meaning.
You twist, because, I twist back.
That's right.
All right, so
we will. Newtonian on us.
All right, guys. So, like I said, we don't try to argue; it just happens naturally.
It does.
Anyway, always fun. Always fun to talk to you, man. All right, people. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your postseason.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.